Okay, United States versus Child Appeal, 052308.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Rob Alvarado. I represent Mr. Childs. Your Honor, the government apparently concedes that it was wrong not to disclose the two informants' misconduct before trial. I say apparently because it's really not clear from the briefs, and it certainly wasn't clear in the trial court that the government was admitting that it did anything wrong. I do note that counsel today, Mr. Mahochko, was not involved in the trial court, and I don't believe he even wrote the government's brief here. However, what the government doesn't acknowledge and certainly doesn't explain is why they did not tell the truth to Judge Mim about when they learned of the second informant's misconduct. And just very briefly, to recount what happened, the first informant admitted on cross-examination that he had taken half of the cocaine that he had purchased in the controlled buys and swallowed it so he could get through the police search, and then later vomited it back up and smoked it. And he took the money that the police gave him for the purchases and bought other cocaine from other cocaine dealers that he didn't tell the police about. Now, when I had made a motion to dismiss after that testimony and the court set it over for the next morning for a full hearing, the government disclosed that next morning that the second informant had basically done the same thing. And they had told me that they had learned that the night before. And they also told Judge Mim that at the time. In fact, Judge Mim and I had a brief discussion where he told me, or he advised me, that there was no discovery violation with respect to the second informant, and so why did that have any bearing on my motion? I had to admit that it didn't, because at that time I was relying on the government's representations that they learned the night before that the second informant had also committed misconduct. Then, when it came to that informant's testimony the following week, I even relied on the government's representation when I cross-examined her. But to the informant's credit, she admitted that she told the prosecutors and the police before trial that she had taken some of the cocaine from the bag that she, the first bag that she had purchased, and that she had asked for additional cocaine during the purchases she made and used that cocaine, and that she had taken money that the police had given her for those buys and bought cocaine from other dealers and didn't tell the police about it.
Now,
I'm sorry.
No, please.
I defer to you.
No, go ahead.
If in fact they were, apparently they were, siphoning off a little of this stuff, I wonder how does that make a difference here in the big picture. These informants had a lot of warts to begin with that the jury knew about.
Well, that assumes that they are telling the full truth. And I was learning about this as they were testifying instead of learning in an orderly fashion as I should have under the rules before trial.
Well, and the problem is that the Judge Mim said you did such an outstanding job. I know lawyers, I like to hear that they've done an outstanding job, and I'm sure Judge Mim really meant that. And he said your cross-examination was so good that you exposed a lot of these problems. So
I exposed what those informants admitted to, but I firmly believe that if I had had more time before trial to consider it, I may have changed the theory of defense, and I may have done a better job at cross-examining those witnesses in other areas. I don't know. In fact, I had made a motion during trial for a Franks hearing, for a full evidentiary hearing outside the presence of the jury, where the three informants and the three case agents would have testified so we could have learned the entire circumstances of how they were handled by the police. And perhaps at that time, more facts could have been elicited, but Judge Mim did not allow that.
Am I correct that the part of the warrant application that supported a search of the Hunt Drive residence was based on the controlled buys with Kimberly Franks?
There was one buy that involved Kimberly Franks that was mentioned in the complaint for search warrant. The other buys all involved the two informants that admitted misconduct.
But there was no problem with Franks' credibility. And would that not have been enough to hold up at least that part of the warrant?
Perhaps, Your Honor, there would have been one valid, reliable, controlled buy. That's possible. But I still believe that if there had been a full Franks hearing outside the presence of the jury, perhaps other facts could have been elicited about how she was handled as well. During the course of trial, it's very difficult to keep up with events as they're unfolding, especially if the government's not even telling the full truth to the judge at the time that the events are unfolding. So I do feel that if the court had allowed an evidentiary hearing outside the presence of the jury, perhaps the result could have been different. That's why I asked for the ultimate sanction here, for dismissal of the indictment, because not only did the government withhold Brady Giglio material, but when asked by Judge Mim about it, they didn't even give the judge a straight answer, and they led us to believe that they had only learned the night before, during the course of trial, about that. Now, that has never happened in this circuit before. This court has never granted dismissal of an indictment based on the prosecutor's misconduct. But I do urge the court to consider it. And if the court were to consider simply a new trial for this case, for Mr. Childs, we would ask the court to look at the search warrant for the Hunt Drive address, because a weapon was recovered during that search warrant, and that led to an additional five-year sentence against Mr. Childs. He did receive a 30-year sentence. There was a 924C count involved here. So there is a very real difference if this court were to suppress the evidence that was found in the Hunt Drive address. So for those reasons, Your Honor, we would respectfully ask that the court not allow this conviction to stand based on this type of misconduct.
Mr. Mahochko.
May it please the court. My name is John Mahochko. I'm an assistant United States attorney from the Central District of Illinois, and I represent the government in this matter. First of all, I would like to clarify for the record, Mr. Alvarado attached the search warrant application to his brief. I believe Kim Franks was involved in three controlled purchases of cocaine, and those calls were taped to Mr. Childs, as well as the other phone calls from the other controlled sources. Those phone calls were taped. There were body wires. There was a lot of other evidence involved in this case.
Could I just start you out, because the brief seems to agree that you have a duty to turn over to the defense evidence that can be used to impeach the credibility of your witnesses. And it's been conceded that Loxton changed his story and admitted to stealing some of the evidence from the so-called controlled buy. And I understand that the government thinks reversal is not an appropriate sanction for what really was a blatant discovery violation. So what is an appropriate sanction here? Have there been any consequences for the breach of duty? I mean, I was an assistant U.S. attorney. I understand, you know, how hard it is in the heat of these things. But this is a tough one, isn't it?
Your Honor, I'm not here to make any excuses about what happened.
No, I know.
There's no excuse for it.
I'm sure they picked straws to send you here. I mean, hard.
I can tell the court that, and as the court well knows, as a former assistant U.S. attorney, there is an internal review process. This case was referred to the Office of Professional Responsibility. There was an investigation conducted. I'm not aware of the results of that investigation, but the Justice Department does police these things, and certainly this office takes them extremely seriously. And I know Judge Mim made that point as well, that that he thought this was a serious matter. So we're not in any way attempting to downplay the seriousness of it. But the fact of the matter is, as the courts recognize, And as this court has recognized in a number of cases, prosecutorial misconduct is not punished by dismissing cases. The Brady analysis, the first two prongs we're conceding here. This was impeachment material. It should have been disclosed. It was not disclosed before trial.
Should there be another trial? What should happen here?
I don't think there should be another trial, Your Honor, and the reason is because of the third prong of the Brady analysis. Was there prejudice to the defendant in this case? There was no prejudice. The material came out either through cross-examination, as Judge Mem noted, textbook cross-examination of the defendant or of the controlled source, and the information relating to Frohlich was disclosed well in advance of her testimony, and the court actually adjourned the trial adjourned for a day, and then the trial restarted the next week in order to allow the defense time to digest the information that had been disclosed. And then Frohlich was also impeached quite effectively with the information. So the information was made very effective use of. There wasn't any prejudice on that count. There was also overwhelming evidence of guilt in this case. As I mentioned, the telephone calls to the defendant were recorded. The buys were recorded by body wire.
Yeah, but, you know, the brief essentially argues, the argument to the district court. The argument essentially was that your witness was such a liar that you have no idea, you know, what he would say at trial. So there wasn't the feeling that there was a need to tell the defense that he had changed his story. And I mean, the court was told was something like, you know, one minute he says one thing, the next minute you talk to him, he says something totally the opposite, different. I mean, this was, you know, the government's witness. How can the evidence against Childs be called compelling if it's based on testimony from people who were changing their stories from this minute to that minute to this minute to that moment when, you know, you yourselves couldn't possibly tell, is this the truth? Is that the truth? Is this a lie? Is that a lie? How can that be compelling testimony? How can that be overwhelming testimony?
Let me just address the court's concern about I think what you're referring to is Logsdon, that when the assistant was asked why this wasn't turned over ahead of time, appeared to have been operating out of mistaken belief that it was his duty to determine whether the story about swallowing the crack was true or not, and that's when he's referring to, he says this at one minute and then he says another thing at another minute. That's not the case, and that's clear that that's not the case. It's an inconsistent statement, it's impeachment material, and it should have been turned over. But that's just limited to Logsdon. And it's important to remember, too, that there were co-defendants of the defendant, or at least co-conspirators of the defendant, who also testified in this case. You had Elizabeth Crabtree, who was selling crack with the defendant at the defendant's direction.
Hiding it in her teeth.
That was not Miss Crabtree. That was Miss Frohlich, confidential sources. Miss Crabtree was the one who was storing the crack at her apartment the defendant's direction, and distributing it at his direction. You also had Mr. Murphy, the defendant's, who was described as the defendant's security, who was also testified at trial about the distributions that he'd made, and those distributions were to Loxton and to Kimberly Franks, as the court's already noted, who there was no impeachment. Well, there was impeachment material, Ms. Franks, but not the discovery violations that are alleged here. In addition, I mean, those transactions were recorded. The phone calls setting up the deals to the defendant were recorded. The co-defendants identified the gun as belonging to the defendant. There was also the search warrant information in this case. The search warrants, in which the gun, the scale, that Ms. Crabtree identified as the scale she had used to weigh out the crack for the defendant, and an additional amount of crack found on the defendant's bed. So the impeachment material that should have been disclosed but wasn't was made effective use of. And there was a compelling amount of evidence in this case pointing the defendant's guilt. And for that reason, the government submits that there was no prejudice to the defendant, and the conviction ought to be affirmed because there was not a material breach. I'd like to briefly touch on the Franks issue, and that's just simply that, as the district court noted, there was no showing that the officers knew or should have known about these thefts of the crack. This didn't come out until shortly before trial, and there's certainly no information that that they knew about it or should have known about it. The officers mentioned that they had some suspicions that things might not be completely on the up and up, but those were explained, and they gave convincing explanations for them. Mr. Logsdon testified that he owed the defendant money, and that's why he wasn't able to buy as much crack as the officer would have expected for the $200 he was provided. Ms. Froelich had a history of dealing with this particular officer and had proved reliable in the past. When she produced the baggie that had been torn open, he questioned her on it, and she gave him an explanation that made sense to him. Particularly,
how does he stored in a tooth? All that?
Oh,
I'm sorry?
How does he store secreted in a tooth?
Well,
that is an interesting question, Judge. As far as I can tell from the record, she had a fracture in the back of her tooth, basically what sounds like a large cavity, and was able to stick the rock of crack cocaine in there and evade the search. The officer looked in her mouth, but wasn't able to.
He actually checked her. I don't know if they check you after controlled by, but actually looks in there. But
yeah, there was testimony in this case. There were three controlled buys involving Froelich. The officer checked her on the first two and wasn't able to see the crack in there. So he did.
Maybe
he
thought it was, you know, dental, done by a dentist.
I don't know,
filling.
Judge. I don't know. So I would submit that there's no evidence of anything that should have been suppressed from the search warrant. And even if there was, the evidence, the other material standing alone was sufficient for probable cause. I see my time is about to expire. If there are no further questions of the court, I'll ask that the court affirm the conviction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
Your Honor asked a question about the sanctions to the prosecutors. I think I can add a little bit more to that. After the trial, the U.S. Attorney for the Central District wrote a letter to Judge Mim saying that there would be some investigation taking place in regards to what happened. At sentencing, I asked Judge Mim if he had heard anything from the Justice Department or the U.S. Attorney, and he had not. To answer your question directly, about a month ago, 2 months ago, I received a letter from the Office of Professional Responsibility with the Justice Department, and it was a letter in response to a letter my client had sent asking what about the investigation. The Justice Department didn't indicate whether any sanctions were taken against the prosecutors, and they cited the confidentiality and the privacy interest of the prosecutors. I do see the prosecutors every day in court, and frankly, Your Honor, I've always had fair dealings with them, and it was this one case where I think the prosecutors didn't do their duty as required. Now, regard to the Franks issue, just very briefly with Sissy Froelich, she was a crackhead. She apparently saw her drug dealers more often than she saw her dentist. She was able to hide a fat 20 of crack in a tooth. A fat 20 is basically a $20 rock of cocaine. Yes, they apparently the case agent suspected her of double dealing on him even before she started making buys from the defendant, and he questioned her about that. He did check her mouth on the first two occasions, and then on the third buy, he didn't even bother to do it. When I asked him on cross-examination, why didn't you have a female jailer or female officer search her? Because you didn't say in the search warrant affidavit that you were dealing with a female informant. And he said something to the effect that, well, the jail officers are shady and criminals themselves, and that's why he didn't involve another police officer in a search of her. Your Honor, that's the type of testimony that shows that the officers either knew or should have known that these informants were not reliable, and yet they told the judge who issued the search warrant that the controlled purchases were reliable. Had the officers even listened to the eavesdrop tapes that they had gone through the trouble to get authorization for before they went to get the search warrant, they would have heard the conversations between Logsdon and Crabtree, where Crabtree was selling two bags of crack cocaine to him, but he was only turning over one to the officers. Or with respect to Sissy Froelich, they would have heard her telling, allegedly, the defendant, why don't you give me a little bit extra with what you're selling me? Because she only stole dope from the first buy. She tore into the bag and put the piece of crack in her mouth. The second two, she didn't bother doing that because the officer had questioned her. She got the little bit extra and put it in her tooth. Now, counsel had mentioned that... I'm sorry, my time is up.
Well, finish up. Go ahead.
Well, counsel had said that that the officer did question Sissy Froelich about the first bag that was torn open, and he was apparently satisfied. Well, what she said was that the reason the bag was torn open is because she questioned the color of the crack that she was buying from the defendant. The bag was a clear plastic bag. There was no need to tear it open to see the color of the crack cocaine inside, and yet the officer was satisfied with that. I don't think this court should be satisfied with that.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all. The case will be taken under advisement. We'll go on to the next appeal, which